Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Recruitment is not easy, but for most of our business, the people are the lifeblood of what we're growing. Get it right and you'll fly. Get it wrong and you could be in a world of pain. So how should we be recruiting, and where should Joe start with his first hire?
I'm Joe Glover, founder of The Marketing Meetup, a global community that connects and educates over 20,000 marketers in the most lovely way possible. Everything we do it to put the human beings we help first.
I'm Richard Wood. I lead the marketing agency Six & Flow. I've worked in marketing for around 19 years now, and I'm a massive believer in that marketers should be trying to engage with people on a human level, not just treating them as leads and numbers in a spreadsheet.
This is Humans Come First, the podcast about marketing and how we can focus on the things that matter.
And try to cut through the bullshit, but probably also adding a little bit bullshit along the way.
Nice. I like how you added that line in.
I know. Do you know, I went off script there.
So, Rich, what's been going on? It's been about 1,000 months since we last recorded the podcast.
It's been a long time, Joe. I have missed that big, beautiful, bald head of yours.
That's the first line I said when we came onto this call was, it's like looking in a mirror. So,
how's your what's it, 6 months since we've done a podcast, something like that?
I don't even know.
How's it been for you, Joe?
It's been big 6 months. It's been a really big 6 months. So I would guess that last time we spoke, we did a podcast, then we would have just about launched TMM Plus, which in itself was a mammoth project alongside the bunch of webinars that we've been going. And it's sort of around that point, it was towards the end of like a massive 18 months push that I think we'd all been doing. So the first thing that I wrote down about the last 6 months is I got some rest, because I think I was pretty much burnt out by the end of that period. So Jet and I spent a couple of weeks on a farm with no Wi-Fi, no signal.
Bing-a-ling-ding-ding-ding-ding.
Pretty much. And just chilled out, just like did nothing. And it was really, really nice. And like these past few weeks, I've done 4 days a week as well, which has been good.
How are you finding the 4 day week?
Well,
are you doing just 4 days, or are you doing 4 extended days? So same hours, less days, or are you doing just less hours?
Well, I mean, like, you know what the real life is like, which means that I'm doing 4 days during the week and then probably Saturday and Sunday as well.
So you're doing a 7 day week, but I'm telling myself it's four.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, I've worked normal hours. Well, I've worked sort of like hours around sort of dad life, but then I work in the evenings and little bits of the weekend too. But like in terms of like structured working days, then only 4. It's good practice as well, because actually the plan is that when Annie goes to nursery, then I'll be going down to 4 weeks proper, 4 days weeks proper, because she'll do 3 days at nursery and Jet and I will do a day each. So it's been all right. It's been all right. I would say I feel more stressed. So it does not like a workload management, which is like, yeah, that fits into 4 days, but you know, like, just gotta get stuff done. It's kind of all there is. So yeah, it's
all, well, all, I mean, that'll happen if you keep chewing off massive projects to deliver in the same period of time, but you know, but honestly, I don't think that story's unique in terms of like everybody I speak to at the moment, particularly those running businesses, are burnt out. And like I was seeing it, so like I was knackered, wasn't into what I was doing, and like I am like, I'm not financially driven with what we do, and I'm like, I enjoy the process, and I wouldn't do this job if I didn't enjoy it. But I was starting to get to the point where it felt like a hassle, felt like work, and so like I was feeling it, and we were seeing it across our team as well. So we use like 15.5 to track everybody's like happiness and like communicate with the team regularly, weekly, and we're seeing a steady decline and seeing like work rates going up and all that kind of stuff. So we took the option to give everybody half days on Fridays to try and alleviate some of that, making sure that everybody was getting rest. We've brought on an HR manager now as well, who is constantly badgering people to take their leave, make sure they're taking time out. So I think it's good that everybody's had a focus on it, but by no stretch are you the only person who's telling me that they're feeling burnout and struggling a bit. So I think it's probably it's basically like long COVID for entrepreneurs.
It's definitely a version of, isn't it? It's just been monster, hasn't it? You know, and it's interesting though. I was listening to a podcast the other day, which is that we probably now have to recognize that we are moving from a period of sort of fight into a period where we can also start to thrive again.
Yep.
You know, and the marketing meetup has been thriving in the past 18 months, but now we're sort of like moving into this next stage and stuff like that. And it's like, it is just interesting. I think it was Reid Hoffman, and the quote was like, in fact, it was on Reid Hoffman's podcast, and he was quoting someone else who was saying that COVID is not a business strategy. And, you know, that really sort of struck a chord, because it's like, oh, wait, you know what? We can actually move to this next phase and sort of try to chill out just a little bit, you know, and sort of get back to that sort of let's thrive rather than just keep on fighting mindset. So, yeah, that was my first one. How about you? What's been going on?
To be honest, mate, burnout has been a big part of it, and making sure that we're on top of that, and not just like my own health. And like, I've been trying to focus on doing stuff that I enjoy outside of work. So golf is a big one. And, you know, I am of an age now, and just trying to make sure healthy diet, all that kind of shit. But as a business, it's just recruitment. Like, we've been hiring at a rate of knots. And we are currently at, I think, 32 people. And if we could hire at the rate that we need to, I think there'd be 50 of us by now. But it's starting to tick over, as in like the hiring game's starting to come back. And honestly, in the last 6 months, we've brought on some incredible new hires. So somebody comes into the business and has an immediate impact. So like we've started to see that come across the business as well, which is great. It's really good to see.
That's nice.
You've had an offer of funding.
Yeah. So from someone we absolutely adore, you know, so it wasn't one of those.
Adore.
Yeah. Like, honestly, every time we get on the call with this guy, like, I just come away with it saying, oh, what an amazing person. So like, it was such a
joke. I definitely didn't offer you any money.
No.
Oh, the other one.
But for now, we've chosen not to take it. And I guess the situation is that presently with the marketing meetup, then we don't really feel like we need it, you know. And actually, it's in a nice place where slow growth sort of feels quite pleasant and appropriate, and the experiments that we're doing to maybe sort of accelerate growth a little bit are, you know, ongoing, but we're happy to do it with our own money for the meantime as well. So, you know, it's just a really, really lovely situation where we've got someone that we know is sort of standing behind us and willing to back us if we want. But for the meantime, we don't need it. And it sort of feeds into that sort of thought, for me at least, with the business, which is, you know, and the business and the community more importantly, which is, let's focus on the things that matter, the impact that we can make on an individual basis, look to impact people deeply, meaningfully. And, you know, growth sort of comes as a result of that. You know, I'm not the 10x guy. I'm the, you know, let's just keep on growing and sort of have fun with it.
So. But we've discussed this. The 10x guy is a knob.
It's so true. I'm so bored. Like, I'm so bored of Twitter threads. You know what? It was just people like saying, this is how you can 10x it. And this is how I got to $50 MMR, you know, and MRR, you know. And it's like, you got to 50, you know, well done, you know, but, you know, don't, it's just silly. So growth for the sake of it isn't what we're about. So it's been a lovely situation. It was a real head spin in a very pleasant way, and it caused me to get serious about a lot of things, which is really nice, you know, because I think the word that people keep using with the marketing meetup is potential, which, to start off with, I was like, I took a bit, you know, like, Jesus, you know, thanks for that, but I've been working on this for the past 5 years and you're telling me it's got potential now. You know, but then I actually realized it does, it's got a bunch of potential, but we've got to keep on doing what we're doing.
I like Joe, he tries really hard.
Yeah, exactly.
It's he's like got the potential.
It's like the most improved award that, you know, you get at the end of the football season or whatever. And it's like, oh, wait, I was rubbish before. But I don't think the marketing effort anyway has been rubbish before. I think it's, I think it just speaks to a really nice potential to help more and more people in a really meaningful way, which it's nice that other people recognize that.
You still excited about the business? You still got like the same passion and drive?
Yeah, well, that's probably why the last thing that I sort of wrote down about these last few months is relevant. So it's interesting, before we got onto this call, you were like, wow, that's a lot of stuff. And this actually caused me to reflect and think maybe we can slow down on some of this stuff as well. But we're adding in more things that are exciting on top of the thing that was already exciting. You know, so we're thinking about a Slack community, got in-person events returning. We've got mentorship matching coming back. We launched the job board. And the thing that I'm really, really excited about is our grants. So we've put together a series of packages from our sponsors in the first instance, but then we're going to sort of spread out the net, which is going to help folks who just have an idea, mainly marketers who have an idea, and just like say, you know what, we're going to support you through a 3-week program that starts with strategy. Then we give them a bunch of tools, and then in the last week we give them some money, and sort of say, you know, off you go, here's that support. And like that just speaks to everything that I care about really, which is that like if things are going all right for you, then you sort of put the ladder down behind you and sort of help people up to that place after you. So that's the thing that keeps it interesting for me beyond the people. You know, the people are given that, you know, it's always exciting to see people. I'm really, really buzzing to see them in person. But these grants is just like, it speaks true to my heart, which is like, I'm just buzzing to sort of bring it to the world and sort of see what we can make happen, really. So yeah, I'm really buzzing about that. How about you? I can see that on our list of things that you've got a couple more. So I'm interested, particularly in the Super Secret Global Project. But
Super Secret Global Project. So this is something that has been a long time in the making. I can't tell you too much about it, obviously, because it's super secret, but effectively what we're doing is creating a mechanism that we can globally service our clients in a way that enables us to grow, but also means that we don't have to lose autonomy within the business or have to go on a massive acquiring spree. So it's going to be fun, because we will be announcing it next quarter, and I will share with you, Joe. Because it'll be fun.
It's very coy at the moment. I like it there.
Very coy. That's me. but one of the things that we have been focusing a lot in 2021, and it's all kind of coming to fruition now, is how entrenched in we are with HubSpot and what we do and how we deliver that. So we've changed up our teams and our structure to make sure that we can deliver HubSpot into as many companies as possible, and still kind of maintain the quality of the rollouts and stuff like that. And at the moment, we are currently one of HubSpot's best performing partners, which is for a little agency that's sprung out of Manchester, is something that always makes me happy. That's you know me, Joe. It's not like I'm competitive or anything.
No, it's not like you're competitive or modest or anything like that. So
you're fucking modest. No, I mean, the opposite. Joe, I'm the most modest person ever. But actually, the big news is that I'm embracing my midlife crisis and I'm getting a motorbike. So
golf and a motorbike within
golf
a year.
And a motorbike. Yeah, I need and then something else to focus on that signifies that I've like fully gone off the rails. Tattoos. I need more tattoos. Anyway. So that's us caught up, Joe. Anything else before we move on?
No, I'm just imagining you get a HubSpot tattoo now or something like that. What would you get? Could you get the six and five
marketing logo? Meetup? I'm with Joe across my bicep.
Actually, you know what? I mean, like, so I'm signing up for an ultra marathon next year as well. So like, the midlife stuff is real, you know, between us. So
it's, dude, get something with an engine. It's way easier.
Yeah, I probably should. These legs. Anyway, I landed like a lead balloon, didn't it? Anyway, So we were going to spend a little bit of time speaking about hiring today, which ties into what you've been speaking about already. But for the first time ever, then I'm hiring, which is mad and something that I've resisted for a long, long time. It's not something I wanted to do. I was always quite happy not having the responsibility of another person's mortgage on my shoulders and stuff like that. But everything with the marketing meetup has got to a point where it's like, yeah, let's get some help in. And like financially, it's like we're okay to do it for the first time, which is in itself kind of a little bit bonkers. And I feel like I'm speaking to someone who's, you know, you go through it a lot. And the thing about this podcast is that as much as we do it for folks to learn from us, then I think I can learn a lot from you as well. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've definitely fucked up this process loads, so I can definitely teach you some of the failings as well.
I'm happy to hear about the fuck-ups. In fact, I'll be even more glad to hear about the fuck-ups, you know, because I know you're so modest, so you're not going to speak about the things that went really well, you know. So how many people do you reckon you've hired over the course of time?
What's in, like, career-wise?
Ever.
Yeah,
yeah.
Ooh, it's got to be circa 100.
Wow.
I reckon, so there's 30-ish that currently work here. There's probably 10 who haven't made it or have like moved on since. So there's probably like 40, 45 within Six and Flow alone. Then previous agencies, probably about another 10 to 15. The agency before that, probably another 20. And then, yeah, so probably kissing 100.
That's mad. And like, how did you know when was the right time to hire in those situations? In fact, let me do another question first, which is, how does it feel to do the first hire versus you being around 100 now?
And I think it's different though. Like, so the first hire I ever made, I can't even remember who or where that was, but the first hire you make when you're part of somebody else's business is slightly different from the first hire you make in your business. So the first hire I made, it, like, obviously it's nerve-wracking because you're like, oh shit, I'm interviewing this person, like, what are the questions? Quickly Google, like, okay, what are some good interview questions, like that kind of shit. Yeah. And you stumble your way through it, but ultimately it's not, typically if it's your first hire within somebody else's business, it's not going to be somebody who is make or break for that business. Like, it's not mission critical normally. Like, that's, for example, you're a marketing manager at that point and you hire a marketing exec. Yeah, they could make some fuck ups, but it's probably not going to pull the whole house of cards down. But when you're hiring the first person within your own business, you're then taking the risk from, like you mentioned it there, you're not just worried about your mortgage anymore, but you then have to make sure that you are able to pay them. Although I think that's the wrong way to look at it, because you are still providing a job and employment for other people, and when people join a startup, they are taking on that inherent risk. So don't shoulder the kind of their mortgage. They are taking on that. There is risk versus reward and all that kind of shit. So don't lose sleep over that. Although, like, it's very easy to say, but I constantly do. That was the first thing. Like, when we started COVID, it was very much like, fuck, what happens if all of our clients fold, our business folds? That's 30 people who aren't going to be able to pay their mortgage or rent. But that, I mean, it's natural, but don't. But the thing with when you hire somebody within your own business, it changes the game entirely, because you go from what is effectively a consultant or freelancer, or like just fucking some dude sat at a desk on his own pretending you're a business, to you are a real business where you need to make sure you have the right insurances, you have the right payroll, you have all of that kind of stuff going through. And that's where it starts to change, because it not only does it mean you're bringing in a management layer, so you have to make sure that this person has what they need and is giving you what you need, but also you have to make sure that you have the admin layer surrounding them as well. So it immediately changes everything on like multiple scales. So good luck with that.
I love it.
But you know, that's the upside to it though. Is you end up with a team member that takes that, it grows immediately, grows up your business. Now it's a little bit different from you, because you've got you and like you're not the only person in the business. It's just your first hire in the business, so it's not like you're going from one to two. You're going from two to three, but so that's when you go from one to two, it immediately grows up the business to another level. Like, you are now an entity where you have to think more about, more past, am I going to earn enough to be able to buy my shopping tonight? So it's, okay, are we going to have enough money in the bank to pay payroll? Are we going to have enough money in the bank to make sure that we can put money into professional development for that person? So it changes the way that you think about all of it.
Well, that's really interesting. You know, even you know, it's really a really good point that you made right at the beginning there, which was about sort of like them shouldering the risk as much, you know, because that's, it's a nice sort of mindset. It's probably a selfish benefit on my point, but also quite a refreshing thing, because I don't think I hear many people put it that way. So that's really useful, actually. What are the best three things that you've learned from hiring over that period of time? I'm taking notes here because I'm curious.
I reckon the best three things I've learned, there's probably way more than three, but the lesson that I learned first, I think, is that having a single person in the recruitment process, particularly if you're someone like me who, I'm very much relationship driven, like I'm good at building rapport with people, and I'm also easy to build rapport with. Like if you get on a call with me and you start talking about something that I am interested in, I will build a natural affinity with you very quickly. So if you go on a call with me and start talking about golf, motorbikes, and like West Ham, yeah, I will build a natural affinity with you. And it, like, stupidly, because I know that that's got absolutely no, like, if I think about it logically, that's got no bearing on whether you can actually do the job I'm interviewing for. But that's what I learned, is that actually having just me in the sales process, and then you extrapolate that out to having just one person in a sales process, is never going to get you the right kind of people within your business, because there's no cognitive diversity around like who is actually interviewing that person. You need to make sure that those people fit. And the other thing that you end up doing is you would end up with a business that is full of people that look like you. Yeah. And act like you, because you have an affinity with those things. And so like my view on diversity across businesses is always around cognitive diversity. So educational, gender, race, all of it goes into that cognitive diversity piece. And you won't get that if you have a single person in the sales process, the recruitment process. So what we've done is our recruitment process, and next to our sales process, is the process within our business that has had the most tweaking and most experimenting. So our normal process is super long, like it is very long, but it is. So you have an initial first stage interview, which is normally with our HR manager and our admin, and they it's sense checking. They then say yes or no. Then you have an interview with normally two directors within the business. They say yes or no. Then you have a presentation interview. So if it's a CSM role, for example, we set some examples and ask them how they would deal with certain situations and get them to map that out and then present it back to us. And then the final stage we have is a speed date interview. So it's basically we get 16 members across the business to do 10 minutes back to back with the new recruit. Nice. And what that does is, because we've always positioned ourselves as being a team first agency, and obviously we don't always get that right, but a big part of that was giving people ownership over the people that they work with. So allowing them to be the final step in the recruitment of saying yes or no. And we've lost some great candidates at that stage because people have gone, no, I don't think we could work with them. So it means that we have a sense check and they have ownership over it. So if they sign off on somebody and they turn up being wrong, they're as much culpable as leadership are, because they helped agree coming in. But actually what it does for the recruitee is that by the time that they start the business, they've already met probably six people across ops and leadership, and then another six people who they're going to be working with. So on day one, they have already met 12 people. So they're not walking into the building or logging onto Zoom, wherever they are, going, shit, I've never met this person. They feel like they are part of the team. And they can ask questions as well. So they can ask questions that they don't want to ask the leadership team. Like, what is it like to work here? What are the holidays like? Procedures, what's the dress code? You know, all those shitty questions that you're never going to ask in the interview process. You can ask that shit. Yeah. And frankly, I don't care if the team are asking them, what's your favorite food? Do you like cats or dogs? I care more about the fact that they can have a conversation and get along. And that's what I'm looking for out of that, because we've already sense checked, are they technically capable? Do we feel like they could fit within the business? And then it's up to that whole culture piece. And I spoke to David Cancel about this a couple of years ago, and he was saying what you should do in that part of the process is actually observe it as well. So watch, like he was like, if you can, be on the other side of the room and watch and see what those interactions are like, see what the body language is. Obviously, COVID, hiring remotely, all that kind of shit throws all that out of the window. And we've never actually done it, but it kind of makes sense because it's those non-verbal cues that you can pick up from people as well, which would be great to see, but I don't feel like it's necessary in our process. But so yeah, it's that was the first lesson, is that don't just have me in the process because I'll fuck it up.
Nice.
But which comes neatly into my second one is hire slow, fire fast. Like you must have heard that 100 times. Mm-hmm. But if you are methodical with your sales process, and by hire slow, I don't necessarily mean like take 6 months to bring a candidate in, but have a process, make sure it's mapped out and follow it, because otherwise you're going to miss things. And then it becomes more of a gamble of who you bring in. And then you like, but if somebody isn't right for the business, you need to get them out of the business quickly, because that is, you can end up in a situation where you've got the wrong candidate, wrong bum, right seat. And if that happens, then you start to damage the business for, like, it can be culturally, it can be like with clients, all sorts of stuff.
That's interesting. I mean, how do you feel about that though? Because I mean, like, firing sounds like something that's a bit
fucking sucks. It's the worst part of the job. It is an awful experience for everybody involved. And I think that's like, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to get like the woe is me for the business having to exit somebody. It sucks for the person more, obviously. But I think sometimes people forget that it's very rarely personal, and it has a personal toll on both parties. It is not a nice process. Now, I mean, that might be because I'm not an HR person in an HR role. It's not something that is part of my day-to-day role, and it very, very rarely happens in Six and Flow. But it's one of those things that has to happen, and it fucking hurts for everybody. Like it feels, when somebody leaves the business, like when they resign, it feels personal. It's not, but it always feels personal. You feel like somebody, there's a rejection in there, and it's the same way both ways around.
Interesting. That's so interesting. Like, I hadn't even thought about that pain that's yet to come.
Yeah, it's not fun. And then probably the last one is that you've got to get the right people into the business, because getting the right or wrong person to the business will make or break the business. If you hire badly, that will change the trajectory of your business. You hire well, I mean, you could skyrocket. You could get an absolute Galactico signing, and it will change the course of your business, and you'll be like, holy shit, we didn't know we could do this. And I mean, like, the ideal scenario is, and this has been my view on hiring since the beginning, is always hire people that are better than me at something. Like, not everything, but like, there is something that they do within the business that they are better than me at, because otherwise we will only ever cap out at the level that I'm at. So if everybody's in my image and can't do it better than me, we will never be better than me. And that's what we look for. We want people who are, or at least have the potential to be better than us at what we currently do. And then a fourth bonus one, make culture the driver. Like, you need people who can do the job, but you have to make sure that culturally they're a good fit. You could have an amazing, amazing team member, but they're a fucking asshole and nobody wants to work with them. So, and that's never going to work, because they might be doing a great job on their own, but the rest of the team don't want to work with them. So you're actually losing the capacity or the abilities from all the others, because they don't want to be part of that working momentum.
That's so interesting. It's really interesting. So, like, as much as anything else, I think being in the situation I am presently, and I'm sure there's a lot of folks who can resonate with this feeling in the professional world, no matter what they do, it feels like I've got 100 things on my plate. And so I do 99 of them really, really sort of not half-assed, but, you know, I'll do them within 50% of my capacity, because that's what time allows. And what I'm hearing from you is, like, this is something that is worth spending time over, and worth being considerate on, and worth, you know, just putting as much as you possibly can into the process, because it's the type of thing that can, I think the term you used earlier was sort of make or break the business, and actually it's that important. And that's really interesting, and sort of really important to emphasize, certainly in my own personal context, but hopefully for those listening too.
The other thing I would say on that as well is hire at the peak of what you can. So if you, if you, as in, and that might be budget or kind of like experience levels, but you get, without trying to make people sound like a commodity, but you get what you pay for in terms of hiring. And with your first hire, make sure you hire at the top of the game that you can afford to bring into the business. Because if you don't, that you, A, you're capping that, but at some point you will then have to bring in somebody above that level to then help accelerate that. And if you get somebody who is able to really like push the business, the difference in what you're paying them in salary, they should be able to bring back in terms of like ROI for the company.
Yeah. And actually, that's an interesting thought, in that ROI, of course, is measured in so many different forms as well. So it doesn't have to be a financial one necessarily. It could be a time benefit, life benefit, professional, you know, even well, all sorts, really. That's really, really interesting. It sets my mind racing. It really, really does. It's really, really interesting. You know, those were things that you really, really believe, you know, that have been important. How about the things that you've kind of fucked up along the way? What have been those moments where you've been like, ah, I got that wrong? And like, we all say fuck ups, but, you know, I mean, obviously these are just like the biggest learning opportunities as well, aren't they? These are the things which you'll never do again.
A learning moment.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest mistakes we've made as a business is promoting too soon. So by that, I mean, sometimes you bring somebody into the business as an incredible individual contributor and they are doing an amazing job, but you put them in a place of leadership, and then at that point, they're not necessarily well equipped with it. And that's a failing on our point, because we put somebody in a role who can't then deliver on that. And I think there's been a couple of times where we've hired into roles that are more senior than the roles that somebody's in, expecting them to be able to step into those roles. And it's been part of the recruitment process, because that's what was needed to make the move across. It's not just a salary. A lot of people are chasing progression, which is great. But then when you put somebody in that position, they then start to flounder. And sometimes, particularly a business our size, you don't always have the right amount of support to help somebody transition through that process. So I think there's been a couple of times where we've done that. And it's very difficult to step back from that as well, because once that's done, you can't down hire somebody, like down promote somebody without, I mean, technically speaking you can, but it's like that, it's not great for anybody involved. So that's been a struggle, and I think that's at times has hindered some of our growth, and not, when I say ours, not just the agencies, but also that individuals as well. Because if you put somebody in a role that they are struggling with, then it's very difficult for them to kind of build traction off the back of that.
Well, it makes sense. You know, I think, you know, you hear it all the time. I guess engineers is the classic example in SaaS companies, isn't it? You get a great engineer and then you promote them to be the manager of the engineers, and then they hate it, you know. Yeah. And you see it all the time. It's a very, very different set of skills. I know that Rand Fishkin in Lost and Founder had an interesting perspective on sort of how people can progress while still maintaining their skill set, which isn't necessarily aligned to leadership positions. You know, it can just be like be a super developer, you know, and acknowledge the developer for being really, really good at their job, but not having to do that sort of linear path upwards, you know, up the hierarchy, you know, just sort of say, you know what, you're really good at this, so let's reward you with a great salary or whatever it may be.
Before she went on maternity leave, our ops director, Sarah, finished building out, along with our strategy director, Ads, was building out our professional development plans. And like, we've got pathways through the business, and there's effectively two pathways. One is an individual contributor, and the other is a like a people manager type role. So we've been very clear that it doesn't matter which role you go down, but you can either go into people management, or you can just become a more senior, more specialized individual contributor. And that's important, because a lot of people immediately equate progression with, well, I'm going to start managing people. And a lot of people don't want to manage people. Like, people management is fucking hard. Yeah. Like, it's by no stretch is it an easy part of the job, but I mean, it obviously has to be done. So if as a business you can't offer both progression pathways, you're either going to eventually end up with people who are doing a job that they either not suited for, or don't really want, or they're going to move on. So as a business, I think obviously not with your first hire, you don't need to map that up. But I think if you're going to scale the team, having a map of where people can go on both sides of that spectrum is key, because otherwise people can't necessarily associate with the development that you think that they can have.
Interesting. That's so interesting. No, good on you. Good on you. That's really cool as well.
Oh, dude, nothing to do with me. That was Sarah and Ad.
Well, good on them. You know, I think that's wicked. I really like that. I think that's smart. And you probably see the benefits for ages off the back of it. So that's really cool. Yeah. How about like making the process, you know, like at the moment, it's causing me to reflect, you know, at the moment we're sort of thinking a couple of interviews, but that feels quite short. You got any advice on sort of the length of the process and stuff like that?
Yeah, so and I've touched on this before, but the process that we've got, we've put a lot of time and effort into it, and that's been built off the back of mistakes that we've made. So there was one hire that we made who came into the business from another HubSpot agency, and on paper told us that he basically said, I've got all of this experience, I can do all of this stuff. And within the first couple of weeks, it was apparent he barely ever opened HubSpot. So we asked him some simple questions. I was in a meeting with him. I was like, well, show me how this client, how many leads that they've had. And I then watched him for 5 minutes click around the portal trying to get to that. And I was like, this is not somebody who has come in at the expert level. And like, we had to exit him. And at that point, we're like, okay, we need a technical test. We need, like, so it's adding in bits as we needed them. And then tweaking those and going, my problem at the moment is it's such a difficult recruitment market, is the time. So you could go through our recruitment process in 2 weeks, give or take. But quite often, candidates are only on the market for a week. So what we're very clear with them at the start of the process is, this is our process, and here is why we do this process, so that you end up in a job that you are suited for, you want, and you get to meet the team ahead of starting. And that's why, like, it benefits them, and we show them why it benefits them, and we explain to them why it takes so long. Because otherwise, as a candidate, you're like, oh, this company doesn't really want me because it's taking 2 weeks for them to actually get to a point where they want to offer me. So if I were you, I would think about your process and making sure that the process is testing, not necessarily like technically testing, but testing for the things that you need them to do. It's testing for a cultural fit, but it's also giving them insight into you as a business and what you have planned. So I think it's also important, particularly with your first hire, is you need to get them on board with the dream, because it's a first hire, there's nothing really in place in terms of like the structure for management or processes or anything like that. But you need to paint the dream. Not, I don't mean like you get all fluffy and kind of like tell them shit that's not going to happen, but share your vision with them and get them on board with what the journey's going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think my tendency will always be to sort of be a little bit relaxed about it in a way, you know, sort of say, you know, the dream, you know, we'll figure it out sort of thing. Yeah, but, you know, that's something that's useful for me as an individual, because, you know, it sort of takes, I mean, not that I need to take the pressure off, but, you know, I'm driven in that way anyway. And I know what I'm doing because I'm the person doing it. But actually, what you sort of speak about, sort of painting the dream, is someone else is coming into the business and they need to understand why you're doing what you're doing, and how they're going to help support that. So that's,
if you start articulating the vision to people who don't know the vision, it will start to crystallize the vision better for you as well. So you know what it is. You've probably got like the numbers written down. Like, you are pretty good at like mapping this shit out. But have you ever really talked through the vision with somebody who's never really, I know you've got mentors and stuff, so you probably have, but talking through the vision and outlining what the dream looks like and how you feel like you're going to get to that point, talking about that more and more with different people and articulating it to different people will help crystallize it to you as well. So there's a benefit from you doing that anyway. But actually, I mean, would you join a startup if they hadn't told you where they're headed? Like, if it's like, oh, we'll figure out the dream at some point, I'd be like, well, fucking figure it out now, because this is a big part of my career. Like, I'm making a decision that will impact the rest of my career. Every time you switch jobs, there is an ongoing impact to that. So, and to do that, I want to know that you're the right captain to lead the ship that I'm getting on.
No, it's a really interesting point, because there was a point in my career where I was working for a company and sort of I actually asked the CEO, why are we doing what we're doing? And they gave me an answer which was fine for them, but it was something that, didn't mean a lot to me. And it was at that point where I was like, okay, well, at least now I know this isn't going to be where I am forever. I'm happy being here in this moment, but,
well, that's
going
forward. One of the things that I wasn't very good at until probably about 18 months, 2 years ago, is articulating the dream or the vision for the business outside of my head. The leadership knew-ish, like roughly where we were headed, but there was no kind of like company-wide articulation. Now every 6 months, we do a company-wide like presentation of here's what the goals are, to remind everybody, here's where we're tracking against those goals, and here's our like ongoing vision and how we've tweaked it based on what's going on, and like making it part of like a bigger company presentation. And we reaffirm all of that stuff as often as we can.
No, I love that. I think that's a lot of food for thought. Mate, thank you for that. I appreciate
it's a pleasure. It's been nice to hang out again.
Yeah, nice bit of consultancy as well, but it's been great to hang out. I miss this. I think it's great.
I miss you too, big guy.
I think even if no one listens, then I'm happy with it.
Hi, Joe's mum.
We did allude to a change of format, and I think we've run out of time to pick up on that one specific bit right now, but I think we'll do it in the future. So we'll keep that as a secret for coming episodes.
You shouldn't have said anything, Joe. Everyone would have forgotten.
Maybe they would have done, but then again, they might be like, oh, what's changed? Oh wait, it's just two bald guys still chatting.
So, all right, Joe, always a pleasure. And I'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week, mate. Take care. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.